you know, details do matter. The details can make or break you.
The Diz Runs With Podcast, episode 257, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With Podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode, just a reminder for some, and maybe a first time of hearing this for others, that each and every month I give away a free custom training program good for the race of your choice, you know, whatever distance it might be, somewhere in the 16-week range. It could be marathon, half marathon, something shorter, something longer. It's up to you. Whatever race you've got on the horizon, whatever race you're thinking about starting to train for, if you want a chance to win a free custom training program, all you need to do is head over to the homepage of my website, dizruns.com, and there's a little button that says click here to enter, and you just click that, the thing pops right up, you enter your email address, and you're all set. You're automatically entered, and you stay entered each and every month. So every month you've got a new chance to win, and that's really all there is to it. It takes about 2 seconds to do. So if you haven't done so already, head over to dizruns.com or click on the album information in this episode, and there'll be a link towards the bottom that says enter to win the giveaway. Click that, enter, and you're all set. So with that, let's get on with today's episode. Hey guys, I'm really looking forward to today's show, though I've got a sneaking suspicion that my guest today is going to continue pushing me towards eventually crossing over into the dreaded ultra marathon territory. Today I'm chatting with a woman that got serious about trail running just a few years ago, but she's definitely holding her own now against some of the best runners in the world. She has a busy 2016 planned, and it once again includes running both the Western States 100 and the Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc, and I'm excited to be able to try and keep up today with Miss Sally McRae. Sally, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on, Denny.
It's the pleasure's all mine. And guys, if you want to check out more about what Sally's doing, and if you haven't connected with her already, some of the best places are her website, sallymcrae.com, and that's M-C-R-A-E is mcrae.com. And then on Facebook and Instagram, you can find her at the handle, or, you know, in both places with the same name, same handle, and that's at Yellow Runner, all one word. And on Twitter, you can just find her at her name, at Sally McRae. And I'll have the links to those places to connect with her and anything else that we talk about today on the show notes for this episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/257. So, Sally, the way we always get things started on the show is with what is designed is to ask what is designed to be a simple question. However, the answer can be simple, and it can be a little bit difficult at times. And that's just to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
All right. That's a really easy question. I love racing 100 miles. Mm-hmm. And I really believe it's because I just love being in the mountains so much. And so I see it as an opportunity to spend the most possible time in the mountains at one time, and all for good purpose. I love racing. And so it's just tying in two of my passions into one day. And, you know, and typically the races that I choose as far as 100 miles go, I like to choose places that are either point to point or just in a new or beautiful place, maybe a place I've always dreamed of going. And so, 100 miles is it for me. I know that sounds kind of crazy, and I don't think I probably would have said that even just a few years ago, but I'm definitely in love with that distance and find a lot of fulfillment in running it.
Gotcha. You mentioned the love for the mountains. Have you always been a mountain girl since the very beginning?
You know, when I was I grew up in a really big family, and there's five kids in my family, and we never had the funds to go on any great vacations or anything like that growing up, which is fine, and a lot of people don't, but our church always put on these family camps up in the mountains, up in Lake Arrowhead, Twin Peaks area here in Southern California. And since the time I was a baby, that's where we would always go. My parents worked in the children's classrooms. And so because they were teachers, we got to go to these camps for free. Mm. And so every summer we would go to sometimes up to four camps a summer. And so I'd spend anywhere between 2 and 4 weeks in the mountains. And many times it was with just my mom and my siblings. My dad was at home sometimes working. And I just remember that being a really, really relaxed and special time for my mom and my siblings. It was so many good memories. We're up in the mountains. And I always remember the moment we would get out of the car and just taking in a big, deep breath of, you know, pine needle, fresh air, and going on night hikes and just staring at the stars. And I just really fell in love with the simplicity of being in the mountains. Growing up in a really busy city, you know, and I grew up in Orange County. And so getting away to the mountains was quiet, you know, and it was beautiful. And so, yeah, I guess I've always kind of had a love for the mountains. I haven't, you know, I never lived in a cabin in the mountains or anything like that. But the memories that I have tied to the mountains and just the feelings that kind of come whenever I step into them are all just really endearing to me. And I really appreciate them for what they've brought to my life. So,
gotcha. What about running? Was running something that you've been doing for the better part of your life?
It was. I don't know. I can't really like pinpoint when I exactly when I developed like a real like love and passion for it. I was always super fast as a little kid, and I loved that. I loved playing tag, and I loved there's something about just like being able to beat all the boys. Like, you know, we'd have like the field days in elementary school and junior high, and I would beat everybody. And so I was actually really fast at short distances. I was really explosive. And I started racing when I was 7. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, did city races, county races, and then I made it to state when I was like 7 or 8, but it was too expensive for our family to go up north to compete. And so I was doing soccer at the time. I was doing gymnastics too, and just little city classes, trying out different sports. And I think I just kind of felt like whatever sport my parents put me in, I was pretty good at. Mm. And as a little kid, like running wasn't the most exciting thing. I loved being able to kick a ball or like flip around on a balance beam. And I loved the adventure and connection side of the other sports. Running just, I didn't really get it at that time, but whenever I lined up to a race, I usually won. And that was fun. But once I got to junior high, and I did like a little cross country team in junior high, that was fun. But still just really was really passionate about soccer. And then when I got to high school, I made the varsity soccer team as a freshman and just ate that up. I had big dreams of being on the national team. I wanted to go to a big school. And then in the off season, my coach encouraged us to do track and field. So I was a sprinter in high school. I did the 100 and the 200. And really, I just saw that as a way to stay in shape and to stay fast. But it wasn't until my adult years that I really took up running as a focus and really focused on endurance.
Well, and that begs the question then, if you were a sprinter all throughout kind of the younger days, and I mean, you know, you with soccer, like you think of it as kind of a, at least I think of it as a blend, because yeah, you're running for, you know, 90 minutes or whatever, but it's not full out, and there's a lot of kind of jog and easy, and then all of a sudden, you know, real quick, real hard for, you know, 20 yards, 30 yards, whatever, for that particular play. Where did the decision come to pursue longer distance type of racing, and eventually to, I mean, you know, running 100 meters, 100 or 200 meters, and now 100 miles? Is that like disconnected, it seems like?
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, soccer was, it demands a lot from you physically. You do have to be quick on your feet. You have to, you know, have to be agile. You got to have really good balance and coordination, and be explosive and powerful within a couple seconds. But then, yeah, you have to have that endurance to go long. And I think, you know, there's different positions on the field. Mm-hmm. And so I found I was a striker and an outside, midfielder.
You did a lot of running, especially on the wings.
I did. Yeah. They actually called me the Greyhound because I could go really, I could run far, could go, I had great endurance, but I also couldn't be beat down the line. And so, I really loved that position. You know, I made the transition, you know, after I graduated, I played soccer. I went overseas and I played with this organization called AIS, and we traveled around South Africa. I traveled around the United States, and it was kind of twofold. Like, I'd play games. I actually played on a men's team, and it was comprised of college players, semi-pro, and professional players from around the world.
Wow.
And then we would also put on camps. We put on these soccer camps and we'd coach. And then the third thing we do is we'd go into like prisons and homeless shelters and really impoverished areas. And we'd just serve them in any way that we could. And I loved it. I loved that whole side of the sport that I loved so much. And I was able to kind of give back in a way too. But when once I had hit my junior senior year, I lost my mom to cancer. She was really young. She was only 43. And my dreams just changed. And so I had my whole heart set on, you know, going on the national team. I had all these colleges that were scouting me at the time. I was on a national level club team. You know, I was very focused, very competitive, and was on my way to fulfilling all that I had worked so hard for. And when I, at the very end of my junior year, my mom died, and I still had a couple siblings. There's five of us, five siblings at home, and my older brother and sister moved out shortly after that. And I just kind of felt like I had this great responsibility to my younger siblings. By the time I was 18, and I became a guardian to them for some unfortunate reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I was on my way to being the first one in my family to go to college, and I just stopped. I didn't respond to any of the scouts that were looking at me to come play at their school. And I actually looked at getting my GED and not actually graduating from high school. I decided I'm just going to get my GED. I'm going to work. I'm going to take care of my siblings. And, you know, this is the way that the road is turned for me. And, you know, I was young too. I was trying to make sense of everything that was right. going on. My dad, 6 weeks after my mom died, got really sick with this massive brain tumor, and he almost died too. And so I felt like within a matter of a year, my whole life was kind of like just falling apart. Yeah. And I had to grow up really fast. And so I decided to, you know, I quit playing soccer on my club team. I continued to play at high school just because it was fun, and, you know, there's that connection there. But I had a lot going on. I was working two jobs, and it was really a family friend that came alongside me. It was the middle of my senior year, and I wasn't planning on going to college. I was just going to go to a local community college. It was right down the road. And she said, you know, your mom would have been so sad if she knew that this is what you were doing. And I was like, well, I have all these responsibilities. Like, I can't do this and this and this. And she just really encouraged me to, you know, stay the course, still go after what it is that you love. Like, your sisters are going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And so she took me to, you know, the school I ended up going to, Biola University. We went to a couple other schools, but it's like everybody had already given out their scholarships. Mm-hmm. There wasn't, and I didn't have very much money at all, but I thought I would just take a chance to see what scholarships I could get. So I walk on to this school, I walk into Biola, and I meet the coach, and he's like, yeah, I've heard of you. And the girls on the team all gave up part of their scholarships in order for me to come. It was,
absolutely mind blowing. Couldn't believe it. And I knew, okay, this is the school that I'm supposed to be at. Like, I would have never chosen this school in a million years. Mm-hmm. And it was not a school that was on my radar at all. I was looking at, you know, being a Tar Heel or going to Stanford, right. Dartmouth. I mean, you know, these are all
the high level programs too.
Yeah, the high level programs. And and so, you know, this was just an NAIA Division III school. And but I felt like, you know, this was kind of like my second chance to still continue doing what I loved. Mm-hmm. And but really my heart felt like, you know, the purpose of my goals had kind of changed. And I had seen how just immediately upon coming on the team, like, these girls worked so hard to be there. They had scholarships too, and they gave that up just to give me an opportunity. And that really impacted me. It really showed me that, you know, we can, you know, we're given gifts to do great things. We have abilities and talents, and they're not always to be used for the benefit of just ourselves. You know, we can use them to impact other people's lives. And my teammates did that for me. And I've kind of stepped forth in that way. And in it, you know, in my running and whatever I do, that, you know, just to kind of remember, like, you know, this is great. I get to do this, but it isn't always about getting a trophy for myself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's how can I use it in another way? So when I graduated from college, that's why I joined this AIS organization. It's called Ambassadors in Sport. And we traveled around, and it was, you know, we're playing and we're competing, but we're also going to reach out to people around us. And then after that year, I came home and became an English teacher. And I just really miss the camaraderie of being on a soccer team and, you know, just that competition. I've always been incredibly competitive since the time I walked. And so I just started running. And I went to China with my husband. It was about 5 weeks after we got married. And we went over there to teach English. And I love diving into other cultures and seeing a country. And I didn't realize until we had gotten there that we had to teach like 14 hours every single day. Like, we were not told that until we arrived. And I was like, how in the world am I going to see this place? So I would get up every morning at 5 a.m. and I would explore the city by foot. I have a pretty good sense of direction. And so I would just go run down random streets and all around. And I think the best way to see a city anyway is on foot, and to watch it come alive. Mm-hmm. So that's actually how I started endurance running. And I, 5 weeks of that, I came back home and I was like, I'm gonna train for a marathon. And that's how it all began.
When you were in China, was it big city China or like a rural town, or what kind of part of China were you in?
Yeah, it was a bigger city. It was Tianjin was where the school was. And then we did travel to Xi'an and Beijing as a part of a little bit of tourism. We had like 6 days of tourism at the end of the trip. And so Xi'an and Beijing were what took part in that. But yeah, Tianjin was it's a pretty big city. But China, I mean, there's a ton of people in China. Mm-hmm. So I think most places you go, you feel like this is a big city.
Yeah. Unless you end up somewhere real, real rural that has nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. Like we weren't out like in the countryside or anything like that. Yeah.
Wow. That's a crazy story. Do you miss soccer?
You know, I have not played since I stopped. Wow. I have not, not even a pickup game or anything, which is really interesting. I thought that was really telling to me. I think, I don't know if it was that I was just done. You know, I played it for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. Or if it was just, you know, I think I definitely lost a little bit of raw love for it when my mom died, because right. She was such an incredible supporter of it. She was at every single game and really, really believed in me. Mm-hmm. And, I think playing in college had so much fun, but it was, the season was just over. It was really weird. I know that, I think a lot of people can relate to that. Mm-hmm. You know, you do something for so long in your life and then you just realize like, okay, this part of my life, this soccer player, you know, Sally, the soccer player, it's over. And now we're moving on to something else. And I've always wanted to be sensitive to that, realizing that there's things that come into our life that are meant to be there for our entire lives. Mm-hmm. And they play a really, really big role. But sometimes we get to do stuff just for a season. And I think I gave soccer everything I had. I did everything there was for me to do. I was a coach. I was a counselor. I did camps. I did, you know, I traveled around the world with it. I played with pros and semi-pros. I did in college. I got that scholarship I want. I mean, I did everything. I gave all of myself to it. And now it's just the moving forward, you know, what else, what else is there? But I don't really miss it. I watch it.
Right.
And my husband's an amazing soccer player, and he still plays. He plays on small-sided and indoor teams and stuff. And I love watching him play because he's incredible. And we get into like the World Cup when it comes around. And he always is watching European soccer, and sometimes I'll watch that with him. But I don't have like a want to go out and kick the ball around. That just isn't there anymore.
Gotcha. I have to ask, and we're probably going to lose, you know, 3/4 of the people that are listening right now. But as we're recording, when this is released, the results will already be here, and we'll know whether we're what we're talking about or not. But as we're recording this, yesterday was the big Tottenham match with the EPL and Leicester City, which, for those that don't know, it's like the smallest of the small teams that has no business winning the you know, English football or English soccer is gonna win the league. Do you have an opinion on it? Do you have a take on it? Have you been following that at all?
I haven't. I've not been following it at all.
Then we won't go into it too much. But it's like. I can't even put a finger on something that would relate to in American sports because of how the structure is and how, you know, like 3 or 4 years ago, they were like almost to be relegated out of professional English professional football. And now they're winning the EPL this year. It's you know, they're 5,000 to 1 odds. Like it's like nothing like this has ever happened before. And it's ridiculous, but we already lost everybody, but we'll plow on and keep going.
But the story, what at the root of what that is though, is so inspiring and motivating. People love when the underdogs take over. There's a story to be told there. And I think the same truth kind of spreads across all communities that hard work pays off. Mm-hmm. And we really believe, and you want something, it can happen. So well done on
yes.
the small team part.
No, I tell you, it is the ultimate underdog story. But getting back to your story a little bit. So you come back from China and you've been doing some running over in China, you know, starting to run marathons here. When did the transition to trails and ultras kind of start to happen?
You know, I only did a handful of road marathons. I did one a year.
Okay.
So that was me trying to get a footing. And you know, I ran my first marathon in 4.5 hours with bloody feet and blisters by the end. And I loved it. I was so slow, but I loved it. I had no idea what I was doing. But then I heard about this Boston marathon and I was like, oh, I want to qualify for that. So I my second marathon, I qualified for Boston.
Quite an improvement from one race to the next.
Yeah. And then my third marathon was Boston. And then I got pregnant with my daughter. So I ran the Marine Corps marathon when my daughter was 6 months old. I didn't do a lot of marathoning. I didn't do a lot of road races, but I loved the training. Mm-hmm. I loved having a goal. And I didn't want to, I'm not one just to do like pickup races or just do a race just because, unless there's a real goal there. And I don't like doing poorly in a race. I don't like being middle of the pack or back of the pack. So anytime, you know, I thought about doing maybe a 10K or half marathon, I would try to really be focused about it. So I didn't have a lot of road marathons, but I did love just the training. So it wasn't until 2008, 2009, I started reading about these ultra runs and these trail runs. I, you know, the great Anne Trason was absolutely fascinating to me. And it was really, I think it was Runner's World that had put out a few articles about it. And they just seemed so left field when it came to running. Like, what is this and why are people doing it? And because of that, because it was just this challenge that I had never thought of, but how amazing that our bodies can do that, I wanted to do it. And so, at the very end of 2009, I started putting that as my focus. I started putting in my training and I said, I'm going to run American River 50, which was April 2010. Mm-hmm. And my kids were little. They were 1 and 3 when I decided to, or not even 1 and 3 yet. I think like 10 months and 2 years old when I decided to do it. So all my training save for about 20%, 25% of it, was on a treadmill. Mm-hmm. And I may have had a handful of longer runs. I think I may have run 30 miles once. Mm-hmm. And then April came around. And I didn't really know much about the sport at all. In fact, I would go on Facebook and I would search the word ultra runner or trail runner, and I would message random people and ask them questions, because what I had learned was that they were really nice. Like, I thought all ultra runners were really nice. The community was friendly, and it was amazing. People would respond to me and give me help and questions and, you know, tell me to buy some gear that I look back now was like absolutely ridiculous and crazy. And looking at what I wore my first race is really funny. But I did everything everyone told me. I was trying to be as prepared as possible. And I took my, we drove up in the literally at 10 o'clock at night on a Thursday night, and to stayed with some friends that lived really close to the race. And, you know, I was pretty sleep deprived. My kids at this point now were, had just turned 2 and 4. And so, and they were at certain points during the race. And every time I'd come into an aid station, my son, my kids are pretty, I'm really close with my children. My son especially loves his mommy, but he would cry and throw a huge fit every time I come into an aid station and run away from him. But it was still a really, really good experience. I placed really well, and I fell in love with it right from the start. Loved the people. I loved how the race was, it was very, very not glamorous. You know, it wasn't, it was very simple. It was really raw. And so from that point on, I just made the switch, and I realized that this is something I'm good at and this is something I love, and let's see what we can do here. So,
well, and I guess at that point, at what point did you go from, I'm pretty good and I've got some talent here, to like, wow, like I can really compete at some of the biggest and baddest races in the world. When did that realization happen?
You know, that actually didn't click until about 3 years later. Mm. In fact, I was pretty sensitive, I think, because my kids were so young.
Right.
And I don't, you know, I don't have a nanny. I don't really have, never really had like a ton of readily available help to me with raising the kids. And so it really is just me and my husband. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that it was a lot of dedication to train for these races. And so if my kids were happy going to the gym while I'm running on the treadmill, awesome. They're going to play in the kids club. Mm-hmm. I started running like at 10 o'clock at night after everyone went to bed and every chores were done and everyone's okay. I'd run for a couple hours at night. Sometimes I'd run like at 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. I did anything I could to make the training work. And I actually, after American River 50, 3 weeks later, I ran another 50-mile race and I placed second. And then a week after that, I ran another 50-mile race and placed second again. Mm, so within 5 weeks, I ran 50-mile races and placed really well, and I loved it. So then I started training for the 100K, which was a few months later, and I won that. I had some weakness in my hips, and I saw a PT. Right after the 100K, I was like, I'm gonna run a 100-miler. Like, I just went hardcore over the top, yeah. Dive in. And a lot of ultra runners do this. I don't know why we do this. It's a really bad thing that we do. We overtrain, over race. Even the pros do this, and they're great for a couple years, and you don't see them again. I was going in that thread. I was race. And my PT said, you know, Sal, you have some weakness in your hips, and, you know, it's really causing some problems in your IT band. And if you're training for a 100-mile race and you do that 100, it's just going to magnify. I didn't listen to him because I felt like, especially being a soccer player, like I have these massive legs. They're really strong. They're really muscular. And I was like, what do you mean I have weakness? Where? Like, and I didn't understand all the different parts. You know, I wasn't connecting my brain to my butt. And I wasn't, you know, there was little muscles and things that I just wasn't, that weren't well developed. And so I ended up getting a horrific IT band injury that put me out for the rest of, that was just 2010, me out for the rest of 2010. I was injured for about 4 or 5 months. It was really, really bad. Then 2011 rolled around, and I just decided I really need to check my heart. Like, I need to really check my motives for why I want to pursue this sport. You know, I jumped into it, dove into it so fast, and it was really good. And I think on one hand, it kind of, I don't want to say like it scared me, but it overwhelmed me because I'm a very competitive athlete, and I've been that way my whole entire life. And I don't like to do things in a mediocre way or just for the recreational benefit of it. Mm-hmm. I'm just not wired that way. And so I thought, well, if I'm really going to pursue it, I want to do it right. So I kind of took 2011 just to think and just run recreationally. My kids were still really little and I wanted to stay sensitive to that. I just knew that the season wasn't right. Mm-hmm. And I always like to encourage moms in this because I think sometimes we get a little anxious and we feel like our kids are our job when really they're our gift. Mm-hmm. And they're young for such a short amount of time. And I know that you can still race and do really well when your kids are little. That's not a nothing to be judged. But it also, for me, it was it just felt right for me to kind of focus more on them at that time and some other things that I was doing. So 2011 wasn't very much racing. And then 2012, mm-hmm. I decided to really jump into it. I signed up for a 50-mile race. I won it. I decided to run AC 100 that summer. And I trained really hard with a buddy of mine. And I got a stress fracture, I guess, before the race, and I didn't know it. Mm-hmm. And so I ran the race with a stress fracture, and about the last 30 miles, I realized what it was. And I still finished the race on that. It was really stupid of me, but I wasn't running for anyone else except mm-hmm. for me at that time, and went right into crutches, and that ended my 2012 season. I went on to do, I healed up in the end of 2012. I decided to do a little 15K race on the trails to test the leg out. It wasn't super fast. I was not very fit, but I just wanted to see how that felt. It was a little Xterra race. And I felt really strong. And so I started 2013 with the intention of I'm gonna be wise. I'm going to take care of my body. I'm going to get really strong. I'm going to build a really good base. And I'm going to take this year seriously. And so I decided that if I wanted to be serious about the sport, then I needed to race in serious races. You know, there's tons of local races every weekend where 50, 60 people race mm-hmm. and everybody is a age group finisher and everybody is in the top 10, you know, and, you know, there's 30 women running. Like, of course, you're going to win something. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to, again, because I'm so competitive, I just didn't want to do that. So I signed up for races like Lake Sonoma, the North Face 50. And I won a couple races that year. I placed in the top 10 at Lake Sonoma, which is a very good race to gauge mm-hmm. what kind of runner you are, how fast you are. It's always very competitive. And I get supposedly during 2013 is Nike watched me, and at the end of 2013, I was contacted by them through my website mm-hmm. and they asked if I had a sponsor, and I really thought it was spam. I thought it was a joke. And I sent the email to all my buddies on my crew, and they're like, respond. What are you doing? And so I responded. And that was on a Thursday, and by Friday evening I was signed, and wow. Tuesday I flew up to Nike and handed them my contract and had a big meeting with the running department there and immediately started working on the development of trail gear. I was one of only five people on the team at that time. I was the only chick on the team, and that's kind of how that all started. So it was really fast. Not a right. lot of racing under my belt, not a lot of experience. You know, I'd say even now I'm still really new to the sport and really new to just even competitive running. Mm-hmm. And which in some ways excites me because I know I still have a lot of room to grow and to be better, and I still have a lot of years in my legs.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, as long as you can keep things under control and take care of yourself a little bit, which would be a big key going forward.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you mentioned a couple times, and I guess we kind of got into it a little bit, but I'd love to dive in a little bit deeper with the idea of you know, when you run a race, like you're not running it more often than not to just, you know, do it. Like there's a goal and you're running hard and you're competing. And you know, when you talk to, or when you look at some of the elite road racers, or, you know, things like that, where it's like they run maybe one or two hard marathons a year. And then you're looking at your stuff and it's like, you know, 100 mile, 100 mile, 50 mile, 50, like all these big races and you're running them hard. How do you make maintaining your health and staying healthy? How do you balance that with running 3, 4, 5, 6 big time races, and big time distances in a year period?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. It's something that I'm constantly thinking about, and something I actually battle too, because I really do think that is maybe an unfortunate, unique trait of ultra runners, and just the sport in general, that we, and especially if you're running professionally, you kind of do feel like you have this pressure to do all these ultra races in one season. We don't really have a designated off season. Mm-hmm. There's a gigantic race almost every single month. And really there, ultra running, there's so many different distances.
Right.
And so it might be this massive, really competitive 50 mile race in December. And then you have a really competitive 100 mile race in November, and there's all these different distances. And so, you know, after I had that year where I raced too much and I got injured, I went back to the drawing board and I thought, I can't do that. And so every year I really only have, like last year I only did 4 races. Mm-hmm. I had 4 focus races, and that was a lot. I was doing Western States and UTMB is no joke. And right. I knew that going in. You know, I coach too, and I've been a trainer for a very long time, and I know a lot about the body. I know how it responds, but I've also studied before I even got on to trail running. I'm a huge research studying junkie fanatic. Like I love just reading, absorbing as much knowledge as I can. You know, I have a lot of coaching certifications. Those certifications are incredible because you get to sit under some of the best coaches in the world and just listen to them talk. And one of the things that I was so fascinated with was, you know, you have these world-class coaches explain to you how they coach these professional world-class runners, and it's completely different from one athlete to the next, from one coach to the next. And it's realizing that the reason why these athletes are so great is because they know exactly what they need. Their coach knows exactly what they need, and they train in such a way. They don't get caught up in what everyone else is doing. So you can have an elite marathoner, and all they need to run well on the roads and to crush races is 110 miles a week. Mm-hmm. Whereas another athlete of the same caliber needs 160 miles a week in order to maintain, you know, that same fitness level and to compete at a high level. And I don't think that athletes are always aware of that. They think, oh, you don't run 100 miles a week. Oh, okay, well I do. Right. And it's like, does your body need that? Or are you just trying to hit a number? And so I have, over the past few years, and especially since being signed with Nike, I've been on a constant journey of really learning myself and trying to understand how well I can compete on X amount of miles. What is it that my body needs? How much recovery do I need after this? What can I handle? And if I take care of it just right, I learn that I can handle a little bit more every year. Mm-hmm. My first year running, I couldn't handle very much. Already in my training right now, I'm able to handle a little bit more than what I was able to handle last year at this time. And so I think that is the key for me. After I ran Western States last year, I actually did very, very little running before UTMB. I did all climbing. I just climbed. And climbing actually isn't very hard on your body.
Right.
It's probably one of the most, it's hard. I mean, you're pushing your body weight up a mountain, and so you feel it in your lungs.
But it's not the pounding.
Very good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I actually prepared for that race. And I actually fared pretty well outside of my intestines and all that stuff. But, but as far as the racing goes, right, you know, last year was four races. This year I have a few more on the schedule, and I'm a little, not hesitant, but I'm curious as to see how I'm going to be able to handle that. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly altering my training program every single week. I have a great coach, Ann Trayson is my coach, and we're always discussing that. So she might put something on the schedule because she knows I did, you know, maybe Saturday I did a 30 mile run that had almost 9,000 feet of climbing in it. What do I need to do to recover and to get back to training hard? How long do I need to have there? And it's every week I make sure that I listen to my body and not mm-hmm. just try to complete her training program. That isn't as important to me. And I think that training that way has allowed me to become stronger. And I think also the key in being able to maintain, like I haven't been injured. I'm going on almost 2 years now.
Wow.
And I do a lot of strength and conditioning training. I'm in, mm-hmm. I'm in the gym about 10 hours a week, focusing just on that. You know, I'm not on machines or anything. It's just getting the weaknesses stronger, and you know, tackling any imbalances or instability, and making sure that my body is rested and recovered, and that I'm mobile, that I have anything that's tight, that I'm, you know, rolling that out or getting it massaged out. So.
Gotcha. Well, and it's, you know, I mean, my background is in, athletic training and sports medicine.
Oh,
so
cool.
It's like, I totally understand all of the needs for all of that kind of stuff and making that a priority. And it's something that obviously like I work towards with myself and the runners that I coach as well, of stressing that. And it's not just about the miles and the miles and the miles all the time. And this kind of ties in a little bit to, it wasn't the direction I was planning on going, but as you were saying this, it kind of dawned on me a little bit, or it led me in this way, I guess. You know, you'd done an article on, I don't remember if it was, you interviewed somewhere about some excuses and things like that. And I'll link that in the show notes to the article if people want to check that out. But for folks that are listening and you know, are saying like, man, I would love to have time to have 10 hours in the gym plus, you know, being able to run however many, you know, 80, 90, 100 miles, whatever, you know, they might be at 50 miles, 40 miles, whatever it might be. For somebody that's, you know, that's struggling to find the time or to make the time or whatever, to even get maybe just a couple hours of strength training and massage work and foam rolling and stretching and yoga and all that kind of stuff in a regular basis. What would be kind of your, advice or your recommendation, both from the coaching perspective and from the, you know, as an athlete and seeing the benefits of it, to maybe try to motivate somebody to make time for those little things that are so important.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm talking about this every single day. I do some coaching for Nike, right now. And so I have an opportunity to be in front of, you know, 100 athletes at a time. And I talk about this frequently because, you know, details do matter. The details can make or break you. Mm-hmm. And it's no secret that for a runner, someone that really loves running, and I'd say even for, you know, any endurance athlete, it's triathlon or, you know, cycling or whatever, we want to be doing that particular sport. If we have time, if I only have 48 minutes to go for a run. And I used to be like this when my kids were babies, I'd be like, all right, I got 48. Okay. Now I only got 47. I'm out
right.
of here. Yeah. All I want to do is run. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend 15 minutes doing planks and, you know, lunges and single leg exercises. Like that's boring. And I'll do it later. Mm-hmm. Everything was always later. So there's a couple things you can do. And really I try to be as compassionate and sensitive to people as possible, because I really do understand that at the end of the day, you need to do what works best for you and your lifestyle. You don't have to change. You don't have to quit your job and throw your family and those you love on the back burner in order to pursue your dreams and your goals and to be better at what it is that you do. In fact, how you go about doing it is going to be watched by those that love you and are closest mm-hmm. to you. And hopefully you're going to be that hero and that inspiration to them, that they too can do the same. And so when my kids were little and I was running and I ran my own business when my kids were little, I did this boot camp and I chose to do the boot camp from 5 to 6 o'clock in the morning because I knew by the time I get home, my family would still be sleeping. Mm. And so I contributed to the family that way. After my husband would leave in the morning, I would put my kids in the jogging stroller and as best of a run as I could get with two kids in a jogging stroller, that's where my first run would come in. We had a little area set up in our garage with mats and bands and all this stuff. And I'd bring my kids in there with me and I'd have them do the exercises with me. I'd have them do planks with me and lunges. And, I have a couple little videos of them doing that when they're, you know, 1 and 2 and 3 years old. And it became fun time with mommy, you know? Like I said earlier, there's also the kids club at the gym. And if you have a good one, I mean, kids always loved, our kids club was actually a really good one. They loved going, they wanted to go. Mm-hmm. And so I would fit that in there. Now for those that isn't the issue, it's juggling kids. It could be work. You're working right. 80 hours a week and you know, you're in an airplane or you're in a car sitting at a desk, you're in these meetings and it's just driving you crazy. I used to do that too. I used to work for a big time musician and I'd travel around the country and I had to go to these big meetings and I was in front of a computer all the time. I worked in a 4-story building in this cube among hundreds of other cubes. And I kept weights underneath my desk. Mm-hmm. I kept a TheraBand underneath my desk. And anytime I had to go to the bathroom, I would go to the bathroom on a different floor. I'd take the stairs. Mm. And every time I took the stairs, I'd engage my glutes. So I'd work on my glutes, engage the glutes going up the stairs, and then it would work on that downhilling going down the stairs. If I was on the phone, I'd make a point to be standing while I was on the phone. We don't have to be sitting at our desk the whole time. Sometimes I'd stand on one foot in a phone conversation. So what? You know, I'm making myself, I got better balance standing on one foot. I'm working on that there. I do calf raises at my desk. You know, I have the weights there. My lunchtime, I got an hour for lunch. Half hour of the time, I'd go out and I'd go for a run. Yeah, I was a little sweaty, but I kept some wipes in my mm-hmm. cube and I'd wipe down in the bathroom before. Maybe I could change a shirt if I needed to. And, you know, TV. Everyone DVRs TV now. Everyone DVRs a show on TV now. And so I always say keep a foam roller in your living room, mm-hmm. behind the couch, behind a chair, or maybe it's every commercial or even just while you're watching your show, get on the foam roller. Don't sit on the couch. Get on the foam roller. If you got plantar fasciitis, throw some golf balls in the freezer.
Yes.
You know, grab those while you're sitting watching your show. Roll your foot out of them. All you mm-hmm. need is a couple minutes on each foot. Same thing if you're at the computer. Yep. You know, practice getting out of that tight position. Don't put your feet back on the legs of your chair. Extend the legs. You know, there's so many different things that you can work into your everyday life mm-hmm. if you're busy. That I, you know, and I put some of these exercises on my Instagram. They're practical ones. You know, when you're stand on one foot to put your shoe on. Mm-hmm. Stand on one foot when you're brushing your teeth or making your coffee. Why not? Have your kids join you in that. Be on your feet as much as you possibly can, especially if you're one that works in an office or if you travel a lot. You're just going to, you know, add a little bit more to your running that way. And as you know, one of the biggest problems with runners right now is that we have really weak hips mm-hmm. and glutes yeah. and those contribute to the majority of our injuries. And so, it's doing those simple exercises, making them a part of your day as opposed to in addition to your mm-hmm. workout, that makes it more doable for people that are really tight on a schedule that are looking to do races because they love them and they love the fulfillment they get out of crossing the finish line and running with their buddies and the social aspect. You know, obviously this is my job is to run. It's a great job. But that's not the reason that everybody runs. And so, you know, that's both sides of it is, ask yourself why you're running. Do you want to do it for the rest of your life? How can I do it for the rest of your life? And that starts with taking care of your body first.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think that's a great point that it is your job. So obviously it's something that you know, you have a little bit more time flexibility with the demands of the day than people that work a 8-10 hour a day job. But at the same time, like if you're working an 8 or 10 hour a day job and you enjoy running, you probably want to keep doing it. So doing the little things to keep you healthy and able to keep running is equally important for the relaxation, the stress relief, all the benefits that us non-professional runners get from running.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, there, I have teammates that work 78 hours mm-hmm. a week. You know, David and Megan Roach are great examples of that. I mean, phenomenal athletes that win pretty much every single race they do. And they work in insane hours. They, you know, they don't have kids, but they have a dog and they got mm-hmm. busy schedules. I mean, they have just as much stress and they're tired, you know, like the rest of us, and they make it work too. And I know, you know, Megan, she's incredible. She gets up at 2:30 in the morning to run. You know, it means she loves it that much. Mm-hmm. It means that much to her. But that works for Megan.
Right.
And again, you have to, you know, that shouldn't make you feel guilty. That shouldn't make you feel like, well, gosh, I guess I just can't do it then. Because I don't do that. I will not get right up at 2:30 in the morning. You know, I do handle two different jobs as well. You know, I contract, I coach for Nike. Mm-hmm. I have my own coaching business, and then I have to run, and, you know, I got my kids, but I don't call my kids a job. They're a gift.
They're
and
right.
so, you know, I think you just figure out what works for you and how important is this for you and how is it going to make you happy? I was speaking with a runner the other day and she was so stressed about running a particular mm-hmm. distance in a race. And I was like, would you not be as stressed if you just dropped down to the other distance?
Right.
She's like, no, she's like, I could run that right now. I'm like, yeah, you run it really, then let's do it. If what you are doing starts to take joy from you and causes stress in your life, then you should maybe rethink it and maybe find another way so that you can still do it and enjoy it and still have good balance in your life, you know, with everything else that's going on.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, Sally, I've got, I don't know, about a dozen other things that I would love to talk to you about, but we are getting closing in on the hour mark, which you know, try to keep things a little bit tight. But I do have to ask one kind of closing question.
Okay.
The most recent post as we're recording this on your blog is a great one, and it was started out with kind of a question or a contest, if you will, that you did on your social media accounts, where you just basically asked people why they ran, you know, and you did that the hashtag of I run because, and people were leaving comments, and you posted some of them on the blog and linked to Facebook and things like that, where you can see the entire list, and it's pretty powerful, some of the reasons that people listed and shared as far as why they run. So I'd love to close today, kind of bring this, you know, put a bow on this thing today by asking you simply, you know, what are your reasons for running? What's your hashtag I run because statement?
You know, I run because I love it. I have a just a really pure love for it, and particularly mountain running. I run because it has allowed me to connect with people all over the world, to see places that I've always dreamed of going, and I really believe that it's shaped me into a much better person and has given me a platform to reach other people in many different ways. And that is really where that whole post came from. I was having a conversation with someone who was like, it was kind of a negative statement that was being made about how trail running is starting to change. You know, it's getting so competitive now, and, you know, there's a lot of people coming in the sport that it's like, do they even like running on the trails? They even like the mountains? They even like doing this? And, you know, why? There was some frustration there, and, you know, and in my mind, my thought is always, you know, not. I know a lot of people that run that could care less about the medal. I mean, it's running is so much more than that. Our bodies were actually created to do it naturally. Able bodies were created to do it naturally. And it isn't a selfish sport. It isn't, you know, we can be selfish in anything we do. People are selfish. I wouldn't call the sport selfish. And I thought, you know, I'd love to really bring to light the good that is found in the running community, because there is so much. And so I was out on a run one day, and I was really enjoying myself, and it was just a really good time to think, and it was a great time just to pray and just enjoy the quiet and the peace. And I was getting in a really good workout. And so after my run, I posted this. I said, I run because I simply love it. At the end of the day, when all is said and done, I just love it. It's just in me. And I think a lot of people can identify with whatever it is that you love. Mm-hmm. There isn't always words to put to it as to why you love it. You just do. And I don't think that people should always have to explain themselves, but I wanted to give other people a chance to say it too. And I wanted to expose that as a way to let other people that aren't runners, and also other runners that maybe are in that funk or maybe in a really rigid place in their running, to see, look at all the other facets of our sport. And the response that I got in just a short 24 hours, I mean, it brought me to tears, because there was a lot of things in there that I didn't even know of. And you never know where someone is on their journey or why it is they do something. And so before we judge and before we just throw out, you know, or roll our eyes, go on my site or go on my Facebook page and read some of these things, because they really are beautiful. And it's not to take away from people that love running, because they do love crushing PRs and they love racing in the medals. Awesome. I'm competitive too. I love that too. But there's also so much more to why it is that we do the things that we do. And I think at the end of the day, we realize that the passions and our goals, just like running for me, is a way that we connect with those around us. And it's a way that we encourage others to live their best life. And really, that is at the root of it all for me. Running is so much more than that trophy or that medal. It's brought a great life of fulfillment and connection in ways that I never thought.
Definitely. And it's a great place to put a bow on things today. Your passion and your love for the sport definitely shines through. And it's, you know, I mean, it's the running community. Like, there's so many great reasons. And that simple question brought so many things out. And again, guys, I'll make sure to have that linked up in the show notes. You can check it out. And it's just start scrolling, and it's motivational and it's inspiring. And it's really a beautiful cross section of our running community, of the reasons that people do what we all like to do. So great post, Sally. And thank you for taking the time today. I appreciate it. Guys, again, SallyMcRae.com. I'll have all the links to social media and everything that we talked about in the show notes for today, which you can find, again, one more time, DizRuns.com/257. Sally, like I said, I could keep going for another hour, but maybe we'll circle back kind of later this year after all the big races and something, and see if we can do this again and play catch up at that point. But thanks for taking the time. All the best
thank
this
you.
Year and beyond, and we'll be cheering for you and looking forward to staying in touch and following along as you go.
I really appreciate that. Thank you, Jenny.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Sally and myself. I have to say it was from my seat, from my vantage point, I think it was a pretty good one. I hope that you agreed with that. As always, I'd love to know what stood out to you. What from our conversation today resonated the most with you? For me, I think it was just the level of fun, the amount of fun that Sally has doing what she does. And I think that for some of us sometimes, and I'm speaking of myself, you know, when I say that, I think that sometimes for myself, running can become tedious. And I've talked about this before. And when that happens, I, you know, force myself to take a little bit of a break and help to bring the joy back to it. But as long as we're having fun as runners, I think that's the key. I think that's the thing that we need to keep in mind and really maintain that focus on why, you know, talking about Sally's hashtag of I run because it's fun. I run because I enjoy it. You know, if you're not finding joy in running anymore, it's time to do something else, whether that's for a season or whether that's permanently, you know, whether you need to take a short break from running or really step away. If it's no longer fun for you, I mean, life's too short, you know, do things that we enjoy doing. And obviously for me, I love running. I love talking about it. I love talking to others about it. I love doing it. It's such a passion. But, you know, if you're, and I hope that's not the case for you, but if it is, you know, maybe it's time to reassess. So that's just what stood out to me, the importance of having fun. You know, for Sally, she loves running in the mountains. So she, you know, the best of both worlds. But, you know, if you love running in town, if you love running on the locations, you know, wherever you love running, or just the fact that you love running, I think that's the key and something that we need to remember, you know, when we're chasing big goals, when we're chasing BQs and PRs and whatever else our goals might be. It's cool to chase those goals, and it's cool to use that as motivation, but it should never become onerous. You know, our running should always still be fun. Whether or not we hit those goals or not, you know, the next race or whatever, keep having fun and eventually you'll get there. So that's my big takeaway, and I'd love to hear what it was for you. What stood out from this conversation? Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns, shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com, or better yet, head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/257, and start the conversation there and keep the conversation going. That way, when somebody listens to this episode, you know, 8 months from now, they can bounce over to the show notes and leave their thoughts. And that conversation will continue. So it's the best place to leave your feedback on each episode is on the show notes. And for this episode again, DizRuns.com/257. So with that, guys, thanks again for taking the time to listen to the show. I really do appreciate it. Don't forget DizRuns.com on the homepage to enter your chance to win a free training program. No strings attached. No, there's nothing else to it other than you just get a chance to work with me for 4 months or so. And you know, for some, maybe that is a string attached. I don't know, but I like to think I know what I'm doing, and I can help you get to where you want to be with a training plan created just for you. So, again, guys, thank you for listening. Thanks for continuing to spread the word and offer your support and tell others about the show. It means a lot. And I hope you have a great rest of the day. And I look forward to talking to you again real soon. Take care, guys.